From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. On today's show, we've got two Marian apparitions that we're going to be talking about. And they're from different times, different eras, different places, of course. So we'll be talking today with Father Edward Looney. He's the author of How They Love Mary. And there's a feast day of a Marian apparition, Our Lady of Walsingham in England. It's sort of an ancient Marian title out of England. And it's really an incredible sight. So he's there on site. He'll be talking to us today about what that devotion is all about and that Marian apparition from the year 1061. He'll be recounting that story for us. And I was there perhaps a year ago now, and we're working on a new episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter. So stay tuned for that, Our Lady of Walsingham. That'll be a new episode that comes out next year. We'll also be talking today with Father Flavio Helio, the Shrine Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette in Attleboro, Massachusetts. I used to live out in the Boston area, so I visited that shrine often. I'll be talking today with Father Flavio, and we'll talk about that Marian apparition of Our Lady in Tears that happened at September 19th, 1846. And we'll try to get to the bottom of that. Why was Mary crying? And, of course, you can check out that episode. That'll be airing in this fall, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, La Salette. That's going to be one of our best episodes that we've ever done. We traveled to the mountains and filmed that incredible episode there in France. It's absolutely amazing. So check that one out. Stay tuned. I'll be announcing the new schedule for Explore with the Miracle Hunter in the coming weeks. And for people who like to tune into that show, we have the next episode coming up on the 23rd, which is today at 6 p.m., Trey Fontana. This is one of the most fascinating stories that we've got. I investigate a miraculous encounter at the site where St. Paul was martyred and the Virgin of Revelation's appearance to Bruno Carnacchiola, a rabid anti-Catholic, changed both the man and the church itself. So most people don't know this story, and it's an incredible one. So check it out. Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Trey Fontana, tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can pick up my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from Tan Books and available at EWTNRC.com. And later in the show, we're going to be looking at the 365 Days with Mary Project, like we always do. For today, September 23rd, we've got Our Lady of Valvanera in La Rioja in Spain in the 9th century. And there might be Saint of the Day, Blessed Francisco de Paula Victor, whose memorial is today, September 23rd. And the question of the week, it's an easy one, but I thought it's worth mentioning. Have there ever been any claims of Eucharistic miracles in Protestant churches? You know that answer already, but we'll answer it later in the show. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. People can connect to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter, and you can join the thousands of followers who look for the miracle stories each and every day. And we always try to post the big ones. Sometimes we don't have big ones, but this is an interesting news item that I thought. There's a new study that came out that 40% of patients recall near-death experiences. And so people have long talked about near-death experiences in which they felt they were looking down on themselves while others tried to save them. And researchers have documented some of those experiences. It's a study published online recently in the journal Resuscitation. Investigators found that nearly 40% of patients recalled some degree of consciousness that occurred while they were seemingly unconscious and dying. Of those, 21% had a lucid recall of their experience. Those are big numbers, in my opinion. And there's a quote, "These lucid experiences cannot be considered a lack or a trick or a disordered dying brain, but a unique human experience that emerges on the brink of death," said the lead researcher, Dr. Sam Pamia. And that's he's an intensive care physician and associate professor in the NYU Grossman School of Medicine in New York. In the quote, "Our results offer evidence that while on the brink of death and in coma, people undergo a unique inner conscious experience, including awareness without distress." So the study involved 25 hospitals in the United States and the UK, and the researchers studied 567 hospital patients whose hearts stopped during their stay between May 2017 and March 2020. The patients all received some resuscitation immediately, but only 10% were discharged from the hospital. So you can read more about this. I posted this on the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter, and it's a fascinating study. And we've read books and had guests on this before, sort of corroborating this sort of evidence. So near-death experiences during surgery, it's a real thing, it appears. So fascinating study coming out of England and the United States. Let's take a look at Catholic Club Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question, give you a prize, the image of the faces of Mary, for those people who have the correct answer the fastest. And so last week we talked with Dan Cheely about St. Januarius, the patron saint of Naples. And as we mentioned on the show, Naples has over 50 patron saints. And so the trivia question was, name any of the other patron saints other than St. Januarius. So here we go. This might be annoying for everyone, but I'm going to read the list of 50. Here we go. St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Andrew Avellino, St. Patricia, St. Francis of Paola, St. Dominic, St. James of the Marches, St. Anthony of Padua, St. Francis Xavier, St. Teresa of Avila, St. Philip Neri, St. Cajetan, St. Ignatius, St. Severius, St. Agrippinus, St. Aspirin, St. Ephebius, St. Athanasius, St. Nicholas of Bari, Santa Claus, St. Gregory the Illuminator, St. Clare of Assisi, St. Blaise, St. Peter of Verona, St. Joseph, St. Michael, St. Francis of Assisi, St. Marie Magdalena, St. John the Baptist, St. Francis Borgia, St. Candida the Elder, St. Mary of Egypt, St. Anthony Abbot, St. Ignatius Loyola, St. Mary Magdalene, St. Irene, St. Hermidius, Archangel Raphael, St. Anne, Aloysius Gonzaga, Augustine, Vincent Ferrer, Aloysius Alphonsus Liguori, Francis Caracciolo, St. Joseph of the Cross, or John of the Cross, Pascal Bailon, Francis Jerome, and St. Roque. And that's the list I've got for you. Maybe I shouldn't have read that, but I did anyway. So for this week's question, we're talking today with Father Edward Looney about Our Lady of Walsingham, an ancient or older Marian apparition from the year 1061. Name the only Marian apparition from England or Ireland after the era of investigation that's been approved. So we're talking about after the Council of Trent in 1545, what is the only case of a Marian apparition that has been declared supernatural by the Catholic Church? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email and give me the answer to that question. The only approved Marian apparition out of England or Ireland in the last 500 years. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Father Edward Looney, author of How They Love Mary, about Our Lady of Walsingham. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. One of the great perks of this job is getting to travel around the world and see some of the incredible places of miracles. And oftentimes, I bring my film crew with me, and we capture these scenes so that we can do an episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And one of the very interesting places I was just over a year ago was in to the Shrine of Our Lady of Walsingham in England. It was part of a trip that we checked out the miracle sites of England and Ireland. And of course, you can't skip over this incredible place of miracles that's celebrated both by the Anglicans and the Catholics, which is fairly unique, I think, in the Catholic world as far as there being an overlap of a place where people from different religions, albeit close ones, celebrate Mary under that same title. Maybe perhaps Our Lady of Valankani in India is another place where people of different faith traditions come together. Well, we're so excited today to be preparing for this feast day, which comes up on September 24th, right around the corner, and to reflect on that. And we have the perfect guest joining us today. It's Father Edward Looney. Of course, you recognize him as a past guest on this show and a host who has stepped in when I'm out of town. So we're grateful to have Father Edward joining us. He's the author of How They Love Mary, and he's actually in England and just at that Shrine of Our Lady of Walsingham. Welcome back to the show today, Father Edward Looney.
Yes, Michael, thanks so much for having me. And yeah, when I was preparing to go to England, I saw that the novena to Our Lady of Walsingham was just starting and that her feast day was coming up and that I would be visiting there during the time of the novena. So it was truly a blessing to have been there during that time.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible place. And I think it's, we might call it an ancient or an older shrine. It's from 1061 is the date of the apparition when Our Lady appeared to a noblewoman in that village of Walsingham in Norfolk. And I think what's fascinating to me is that there are these various places around the world. We have Our Lady of Loreto, for example, and others where there's a House of Mary in Ephesus in Turkey. They're all different stages of houses of Mary from Mary's life. But we have this vision where Mary presents the house of that she lived in as sort of a plan or a design to this noblewoman so that she might rebuild it. Talk a little bit about the history and the tradition that relates to this incredible apparition site, Our Lady of Walsingham.
It's interesting that you mentioned that it was a noblewoman. So we often think of Lourdes or Fatima and how they're peasant children that receive these apparitions. But here you have a person of nobility named Rocheldis who receives this apparition or vision. Some might describe it as a dream even, but that Our Lady comes to her, and she was a very pious woman, a devout woman throughout her life. And at this particular moment in her life, Our Lady comes and takes her to Nazareth. So there's this mystical transportation back in time to the home of Mary at Nazareth. Of course, the place where the Word became flesh at the Annunciation, which is a huge feast day for Our Lady of Walsingham, is recalling the Annunciation and that moment of the angelic salutation and such. And as Rocheldis is taken in this dream, Mary asks her, I want you to build a house, a replica of this place, gave her the dimensions, told her everything she was supposed to do, and to build that in Walsingham, and that from there she would provide her help. She said, all who seek me there will find succor or will find help. And it's become known as England's Nazareth. And as you said, it was 1061. So this is a long time ago. Right after that, what's going to happen is that really Christians aren't allowed to go to the Holy Land. Pilgrimages are forbidden because of the safety issue. And so now people in England would be able to go to Walsingham. And it was one of the most popular places of pilgrimage outside of the Holy Land or Rome or Canterbury, also in England, where Thomas Becket was martyred. And so this was one of the top five pilgrimage destinations, you know, maybe the fifth one, fourth one, would be the Way of St. James in Spain as well. So you have England's Nazareth. And Rocheldis builds this house. It was there in this little village of Walsingham. And Rocheldis' son then funds this monastery, this Augustinian priory. And that's where the house is built. And that's where the priory is built up around the house. But then, of course, you have in 1538, King Henry VIII, is seeking to dissolve religious institutions. There's this great persecution that takes place in England of Catholics and believers, and Walsingham is toppled. And so no one is able to go there. It's kind of a secret place. The only way the story is transmitted is through oral history and through tradition, people talking about pilgrimages of the past. And, you know, speaking of pilgrimages, people of all different walks of life, but especially the kings. Kings went there. King Henry III, King Edward I, King Henry VIII even went there praying that he would have a male heir to the throne. So it's been a place that has been visited by the people of England of all different classes and life. And so truly a tremendous place. And as you mentioned, there's the Anglican shrine, which now is not really where the true house was, but it's kind of what was built when it returned in the 1900s, that they decide this is where we'll build. And so they built what they thought was a replica. They created that center of devotion again for Our Lady of Walsingham. So, you know, I went there. I didn't know much about it, actually, to be completely honest. And it was kind of the novelty of it. I'm like, I don't want to learn anything about it before I get there. I want to kind of just go as kind of this blind pilgrim, experience it for myself. And I kind of thought, you know, when people always tell me there's the Anglican shrine and the Catholic shrine, I always thought they were across the street from each other. that the Anglicans would have their place and the Catholics would have their place.
Yeah, they're not close, are they?
No, they're a mile away, a mile and a half away about. And the Catholics have what's called the Slipper Chapel. And essentially,
yeah, talk about that. What is the Slipper Chapel? That is sort of the famous location there on site.
Yeah, so it's really the historical, the most venerable now of all the places beside the ruins of the Abbey, because the pilgrims, when they would go there, because this was England's Nazareth, remember that the people viewed this almost as if they were going to the Holy Land. And one of the customs in the Holy Land was that people would leave their shoes and they would enter the Holy City barefoot. And so this little chapel, which was just really, in a sense, a roadside shrine along the way to Walsingham, just a mile and a half away, the people would leave their shoes there and they would proceed to England's Nazareth, to Our Lady's house, barefoot. And so that's really the history of the Slipper Chapel. But even more interesting that, again, with the suppression from King Henry VIII, the Slipper Chapel isn't torn down, isn't toppled into ruins, but it becomes a barn. And so animals are grazing this barn. And so once the property falls back into the hands of the Catholics, and there was this devout woman in Walsingham, she was a patron of the Benedictines, she was an oblate. When she converted from Anglicanism to Catholicism, she gave the shrine back over to the Catholics. And so that's why the Catholics can have their own dedicated place of worship there in Walsingham. And today it's been elevated to a basilica by Pope Francis. And again, a beautiful place in Walsingham. So almost if you're making a Walsingham journey, or what they would call the Walsingham Way, it would be most appropriate to go to the Slipper Chapel first and then to go to the Anglican shrine and into town. I did it the reverse opposite, but really that's the part of the tradition there of honoring Our Lady and her home.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I guess I did it the way you recommend, which would be to go to the shrine for the Catholic shrine first, and then eventually we made our way to the Anglican one as part of filming for the Explore program that's coming out next year. We're talking today with Father Edward Looney, the author of How They Love Mary, and he's at Our Lady of Walsingham, and that feast day is September 24th, coming right up. So we have an on-site reporter today, with that being Father Edward Looney. So we're grateful for his insights. Describe the shrine a little bit for people. I think that when we talk about it was elevated to the level of a basilica, it might be one of the smaller basilicas in the world, to be honest. It's quite a small place. And I was one of the things that really struck me when I walked around that shrine was, we probably landed on some sort of a celebration day or a feast day there, because we had so many people from all walks of life, people from Indian descent and otherwise. The bishop was there that day visiting, so it was probably a big day for one reason or another. But it was a very active shrine. There were many people there. Talk about what you saw when you walked around the shrine.
Yeah, I had the same experience that you had. There were tons of people there. They had mass at midday. But then we went actually back into town, my priest friend and I, after we were visiting there, and went back into town, did a few things there, and we went back because I was so overwhelmed by the number of people there. Because, you know, it's not like Lourdes where it's such a expansive property and you can kind of find your own little isolated place. No. When you have hundreds of people on this property, you're pretty much, you know, surrounded by people. I'm like, oh, this is a little too much for me. I need a little breathing room. So we went back, you know, around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it began clearing out, and we had the chapel to ourselves, and we're able to pray there and to appreciate the grounds. And so there is the Slipper Chapel, the historical chapel dating many centuries, and then there's they built this, they call it the Barn of Our Lady of Reconciliation, and that's really the main place where they'll celebrate the Mass and honor Our Lady of Walsingham. And really, the presence of Our Lady. And so I just think this is so special that you have the home of Our Lady as she gave it to Recheldis and as she had it built. And so we're really invited into Nazareth, invited into Mary's yes and Mary's obedience. And we're able to spend time really with Our Lady in her home, as we invite her into the home of our own heart. So that was, for me, what happened, at least spiritually.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a great reflection, what can be experienced there. And just a little side note for me, something I really enjoyed being at that shrine. Of course, people know I love titles of Mary, and I have this 365 Days with Mary project. And always like to know about Marian apparitions from all around the world, and it always surprises me when I run into one that I haven't heard of before. But when you walk a little bit away from the chapel, there's these placards or boards that list all the titles of Mary throughout England and around the world. It's quite impressive. The placards there that are up that describe the various Marian apparitions throughout history in England and otherwise. So I don't know if you saw that when you were walking by some of the signage there.
Yeah, I think I did. And there was something in Europe where it was like the Marian Europe connection or something like that. And they had a big sign with all the different sites and whatnot. And while I was even there, I was able to pick up, there was this book about Our Lady and devotion to her in England. And so I'm looking forward to making my way through that, called Shrines of Our Lady in England. And, I was just reading on Wikipedia just the other day, and, you know, I'm like, oh, I missed all these Our Ladies, you know, Our Lady of Ipswich and Our Lady of whatever, you know. So there's so many different titles of Our Lady that we can discover for sure.
Absolutely. We've been talking today with Father Edward Looney about Our Lady of Walsingham, whose feast day is upon us September 24th. It's a great place to visit for anybody who's in England and Ireland. Swing by and see this ancient, or at least older, shrine to Our Lady under that title, with this slipper chapel and very small basilica on site. It always reminds us the enduring quality of our faith to see something from so many years ago, so many centuries ago, there at that site. And Father Edward, as we wrap up the interview today, I know you're the author of the book, How They Love Mary, and traveling to these places around the world that relate to Our Lady always strengthens your faith and your connection to Mary. What are you working on these days? What's one of your next projects that you got coming up?
Oh, boy. I don't really have anything up the pipeline right now. There's always lots of ideas of what you could go with and run with, whether it's a reflection on the glories of Mary and doing like a 20-part series for a publisher on it, or there's the possibility that I'll be reading Anne Catherine Emmerich's The Revelations, which is like 4 volumes, so that might be coming too. So there are projects in the pipeline, but nothing like really solidified yet.
All right. Well, that Anne Catherine Emmerich, those volumes will keep you busy, I'm sure, if you decide to take a bite out of that. So that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Father Edward Looney, for alerting us to your travels there in Walsingham. We're so excited to have an on-the-ground reporter talking to us about this incredible Marian apparition from 1061. Thanks so much, Father Edward, for joining us on today's program.
Well, thanks for having me.
God bless. That was Father Edward Looney, author of How They Love Mary. He's at the Shrine of Our Lady of Walsingham in England, talking to us about that apparition account in 1061, and that house of Mary that was built there, and the slipper chapel, and the basilica as it is now. It's really a unique Marian apparition site and shrine. I encourage anybody in that area to check that one out. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Have there been any Eucharistic miracles that have happened in Protestant churches? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill and the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting your questions. Sometimes I give a talk around the country. I speak maybe 20 times a year at different shrines and parishes and conferences, and I give about a 45-minute lecture, and then after the lecture, I answer questions. I love to hear what people are thinking about and the questions that they have, and I also love getting email questions, and we have a good one this week. Well, it's a question that everybody knows the answer to, so maybe it's not that good, but here's the question. Good evening. I'm writing about Eucharistic miracles. I was just at a church thinking about Eucharistic miracles and how people should believe in them, considering all the evidence. We're lucky as Catholics. Protestants, however, don't believe what we believe regarding the Eucharist. The question is, has anyone ever tried to report a miracle with a host from a Protestant church? I know this cannot be, but wondering what has been reported. I suspect not, and that would mean only Catholic churches have hosts that have miracles associated with them, as it should be, and in my opinion, this is more evidence to believe in what Jesus said regarding his body and blood. Thanks, Bob. Well, thanks, Bob, for your question. And of course, you answered your question in the question, which I like as well. So Bob answers the question that, of course, because in Protestant churches, it isn't the body, blood, soul, and divinity. There is no transubstantiation that occurs there. It's they view the bread as a symbol, and they don't have the ability to change it into the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ through the priesthood. So, of course, that answer is there's never been a miracle in a Protestant church. But I think the question more specifically was, has there ever been a claim of a Eucharistic miracle in a Protestant church? And I can't say that I've ever heard of one. For sure, there's definitely never been a Eucharistic miracle in a Protestant church, but I've also never heard of a case where that was presented as a potential thing to investigate. So it's a simple answer and a great question, Bob. But I think you were on the right track already with it, with your own question, which is there have been no Eucharistic miracles, of course, in Protestant churches, and there have not, in my knowledge, ever been a claim of one. So fascinating, fascinating question. So thanks, Bob, for your question. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or just go to my website and miraclehunter.com and send me a message that way. And we'll see if we are answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day. And for today's date, September 23rd, we've got Our Lady of Albanera in La Rioja in Spain in the 9th century. And the story goes that the title was established at Anguiano in a community of La Rioja in north central Spain, located near Najera, where it's celebrated on September 23rd. And according to tradition, one day a criminal named Nuno Oñez, upon hearing the pleas of his next victim, Nuno repented of his many crimes. An angel appeared to him, asking him to search in Valvanera for an oak tree with a flowing fountain at its base and surrounded by swarms of bees, where he would find an image of the Virgin Mary. Nuno went with a priest on the next Sunday and found the image, just as the angel had said. In that place, he built a shrine that became known as the Chapel of Santo Cristo and later resulted in the Valvanera Monastery, where the Virgin is still venerated to this very day. And that's September 23rd today, Our Lady of Valvanera from La Rioja in Spain. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to the website 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book, you can download the free app, or you can follow it on Facebook, where there are 10,000 followers getting a daily title of Mary. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We always look at the sainthood process and those people who are coming down the pipe, the people who are moving along from servant of God, venerable, to blessed and to saint. And so, and we also look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. So those are venerables, servants of God, and those people without all their miracles, that someday they might be saints. And so for today's day, we've got Blessed Francisco de Paula Victor. His memorial is September 23rd. And he was born on April 12th, 1827, in Campanha, in Minas Gerais, in Brazil. He was born a slave and trained as a tailor, and he felt a call to the priesthood. But being a slave, he had to have special dispensation to enter a seminary, and was shunned by fellow seminarians and the parishioners of his first assignment in the Diocese of Campanha in Brazil. His parishioners even refused to accept communion from his hands, and he persevered in his vocation. He was always patient, always forgiving, always dedicated to the faith and the priesthood, and eventually won over the people to the point that there were protests when the diocese considered transferring him to another parish. Quite a turnaround. He died on September 23rd, 1905, in Três Pontas in Minas Gerais in Brazil. He was declared venerable on May 10th, 2012 by Pope Benedict XVI, beatified on November 14th, 2015 by Pope Francis. And his beatification was celebrated at the parish of Our Lady of Ajuda in Três Pontas in Minas Gerais. It was presided by Cardinal Angelo Amato. And that is the Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Francisco de Paula Victor. With one more miracle, he will be declared a saint. And for people interested in checking out the television series They Might Be Saints, next Wednesday on the 26th at 8 a.m. Central Time, They Might Be Saints, Francis Xavier Silos. The life of Francis Xavier Silos, a renowned confessor, spiritual director, and leader of missions throughout the United States in the early 19th century, and the promising new miracle that's being attributed to him. That's the episode airing on the 26th, Francis Xavier Silos. And the following week, October 4th, will be the airing of the Mother Teresa Dujic episode. That's the brand new episode that's coming out on the feast day of St. Francis, and that's October 4th at 8 a.m. Central Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Shrine Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette, Father Flavio Helio. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Believe it or not, since the Council of Trent in 1545 to 1563, there have been approximately 10 times that the Vatican has recognized the Marian apparition beyond the approval of the initial bishop. And so this case of Our Lady of La Salette in France from 1846 is one of those very rare occasions. So on September 19th, we have the feast day, which celebrates the date of September 19th of 1846, where 6,000 feet up in the French Alps, Mary is believed to have come to Maximin Girard, age 11, and Melanie Matthew, age 14, and while they were tending sheep. And her appearance was in sorrow and tears, and she called for the conversion and penance of sins. This is one of the major apparitions that we have in church history. And on this occurrence, Mary appeared sitting, and she appeared just one time, both of which are very rare in the history of apparitions. So I think that that people are fascinated to know about this, perhaps because of the messages that were given at La Salette that have been controversial because they've been expanded over the years by the visionaries. Melanie wrote an initial secret of La Salette down for the Pope, or the local bishop, and later she expanded that secret of La Salette to, five times longer, or whatever it is, but significantly longer, and it included some difficult prophecies referring to the future for the church. And so there were also many prophecies that came up for France as far as a plague or a famine, and So this is some of the things that I think in December of 1846, most of the popular crops were disease-stricken. In 1847, a famine hit Europe, which resulted in the loss of approximately 1 million lives, including 100,000 in France alone. So these are prophecies that came true. And when we talk about the look of the Virgin Mary, her clothing was silver-white and brilliant. It was intangible, made up of light and glory, according to the visionary's account, and sparkling and dazzling. And the visionary said that there was no expression nor comparison to be found on earth. The Most Holy Virgin had a yellow pinafore as well. And so there is a crown of roses that were placed on her head, and this was just a magnificent, majestic sight, according to the visionaries. So this is very unique in the sense that it is an apparition that appears just once. There are very few like that, like Nock and several others, but it's very, very limited, those numbers. But when we look at this, the secrets of La Salette gained great controversy over the years, and there was a given during the second stage of the apparition when the Virgin Mary was standing upright and she talked to the children, and the secret had been written down in several versions and, like I say, is the subject of much controversy. Well, we're so excited today, ahead of that feast day on September 19th, to talk to an expert on Our Lady of La Salette, and that is the director of the shrine there in Attleboro, Massachusetts, and that is Father Flavio Gili. And it's an incredible shrine. I've been there myself when I lived in the Boston area. I went and was able to see that shrine. And they have, especially around Christmas, it's a beautiful place to go. And they'll be celebrating the feast day there on September 19th. Well, we're so excited today to talk to somebody who is a true expert on Our Lady of La Salette, and that is Father Flavio Giglio. Welcome to the program today, Father Flavio.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Father. And when we talk about these apparitions that happened in 1846. They just happened on a single day where two children saw the Virgin Mary weeping and sitting, and she had some very, very important messages for France and for the world. Describe the scene. What happened that day on September 19th?
Yes, as you said, first of all, and this is one of the singularities of the apparition of La Salette, Mary actually appeared only once to the two children, Melanie Calvat, that she was 14, and Maximin Giraud. He was a shepherd, a 11 years old boy. And the whole apparition lasted actually not really a lot of time, around 20 minutes, we think. And the apparition opened with a very encouraging word and message of hope, saying to the children, "Come near, my children, I have a great news." And then in the old message, which has been really very simple, Mary just asked the children one single question, "Do you pray well?" And the children answered, "No." And so Mary said back to them, "If you have time, just pray in Mary and in our Father." And so to say that it's very, very basic, but the core of the message is really a heartfelt call to all of us to get back closer to the Son, Jesus the Christ. And so it is a message that calls us for conversion and a message that calls us to reconciliation with ourselves, with God, with others, with the world.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Father Flavio Giglio, the Shrine Director of the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette. This is a very important apparition in church history. You can go to the shrine there in France and see how those apparitions have been celebrated over the years. But you can also go to Attleboro, Massachusetts, where the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette resides. And Father Flavio, for those people who have not heard of this shrine or who would be arriving on pilgrimage, what would they see at the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette?
Well, the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette, it's a beautiful property with 100 acres of land. And it is also known as an island of peace and mercy for the beauty of the surrounding and the peaceful setting of the surrounding. And so, of course, being a place dedicated to Mary, all the components of the property are related to Mary, starting with the church that is dedicated to Our Lady of La Salette, but then also next to the church we have the so-called Chapel of Light, that is a chapel where visitors and pilgrims light candles for their own intentions or the intentions of the beloved one. Or, for example, the Rosary Pond, that is dedicated, again, to Mary, more specifically to the prayer of the Rosary. Or really the core of the property actually is the so-called La Salette Garden, where we do have a reproduction of the three main phases of the apparition. The first Mary, when she appeared to the two shepherds, and then a second representation depicting the dialogue between Mary and the two shepherds, and then a third representation that just depicted the very last moment before Mary disappeared again from the sight of the two children.
Wonderful. Well, I can attest to this place myself. I've been there when I lived in the Boston area. I've been to this National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette in Attleboro, Massachusetts. People can find out more if they go to the website lasaletteattleboroshrine.org. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Flavio Giglio, the Shrine Director, for joining us today to talk to us about some of the great history related to Our Lady of La Salette and also to talk about this incredible shrine right here in the United States. Thank you so much, Father, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
God bless. And that was Father Flavio Giglio from the National Shrine of Our Lady of La Salette in Attleboro, Massachusetts. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Father Edward Looney, talking to us about Our Lady of Walsingham, and Father Flavio Giglio from Our Lady of La Salette Shrine in Attleboro, Massachusetts. Tonight, on September 23rd at 6 p.m., we have Explore with the Miracle Hunter. We'll be looking at the episode from Trey Fontana in The Incredible Conversion of Bruno Cernacchiola. Check out my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from Tan Books and available at EWTNRC.com. I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.